we don't regret the partnership that we had, but it's more about the culture that the company has. And Gerdau has this its own culture. Gerdau wants to really bring the knowledge and the methodology inside the house in order for us to keep our knowledge and keep our track record and keep the information that we want to bring.
Hello, and welcome to the CVC Unplugged podcast from GCV. I'm Fernando Moncada. With each passing year, the Latin American corporate venturing market gets more mature. 5 years ago, you would have had a hard time finding more than a handful of CVCs in the region, but today, they're all over the place, and especially in Brazil. As corporate mentalities shift away from the M&A focus to a wider culture of innovation, companies with the willingness but perhaps not the internal skill set to set up their own venturing unit are using third-party partners to manage that CVC activity. As the corporates mature further, however, they're also taking that venturing activity back under their umbrella. My guest today is Arthur Alves, corporate venture capital manager of Gerdau Next Ventures, the CVC arm of Brazilian steel manufacturer Gerdau. The venture fund was established in 2020 in partnership with American CVC as a service firm Touchdown Ventures, and Alves was hired last year to fully integrate Gerdau Next Ventures back into its parent company. We talk about what that process was like, the challenges involved in making that transition, the relationship building that had to happen with the existing portfolio companies, and how, if at all, the thesis has changed since the handover. We also touch on the internationalization of the unit, its ambitions beyond the Brazilian market, as well as the prospects of the Latin American venture market as a whole, and the bottlenecks that still remain. Alves, who had previously worked with CVCs as a consultant and founded his own startup, gives great insight into the workings of a young CVC that's finding its feet with ambitions to establish a name for itself in its own right. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to CVC Unplugged, and above all, enjoy the show. Arthur, it's great to see you again. How's it going?
Great, great. Thank you, Fernando. It's really a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
Of course. Well, whereabouts are you at the minute? Is it Rio or Sao Paulo again?
I'm in Sao Paulo right now.
Sao Paulo. Sorry, I know you've told me before, but...
Oh, that's okay.
Well, we'll be there next month. Well, by the time this comes out, it'll be next month, October, that we're going to be there for our event, so hopefully we can grab a coffee together.
Awesome. Let's go. Let's do it.
Well, firstly, tell me a bit about yourself and your kind of background. How did you get to Gerdau Next Ventures?
Oh, that's great. Okay. So I've been working in corporate venture capital since 2018. That time I was working with a company in Brazil here, and they were trying to invest in some kind of technology and some kind of startups. And I try actually to build some kind of corporate venture capital fund there, but they were not prepared at the time. But that was my first experience on doing that. So we did some kind of 3 or 4 investments there at the time. But in 2020, the pandemic hit here in Brazil. And at the time, I was planning to start my own business. I planned in the last month of 2019, and I started my company in 2020. So I left the company. I left my career as an executive or a manager, and I started my journey as an entrepreneur. That not went well. The company gone bankruptcy in 2020. I write off my investment there also. So
it was a tough time to be a startup around that time.
Exactly. I mean, like, we got some news from China, and we hope that it was not coming to Brazil, but was not the case. In the end of the year in 2020, I write off. I had some investors with me, and I give back them the money. And actually, I came back to the market. But at the time, I was trying to help some kind of companies to start their own corporate venture capital strategy there. So I joined a consultant company here in Brazil called ACE. ACE was at the right time, at the right moment, when the corporate venture capital became like a real trend here in Brazil. So I got a really good experience there because I worked with some of the best corporate venture capitals at that time. And meanwhile, Gerdau was planning to internalize the process here. As a, they started a fund in 2020 with a third venture partner here called Touchdown Ventures. And they were changing this process to an internal process here. So that's when they invited me to join their team and start this process here inside Gerdau. So that's my long story short career here, history here. So that's where I'm now.
It's you know, fascinating the process of kind of internalizing the unit that was kind of managed by a third party service provider in Touchdown Ventures. And I want to dig in more into that. But first, a bit more about how things are at the minute. So how have you structured the team since you started?
Right now, we have a team of 5 people here. So it embraces the open innovation operations here and also the fund. We have like a 2 main areas here inside the department. So I'm the manager for the fund and also for the open innovation and also for the incubation strategy here in Gerdau. So for sure, actually, if I have to explain exactly how Gerdau works, it's going to be more complex because each operation here in Gerdau has its own demands or can also open a open innovation program. They can start an open innovation program. So it's really fluid way that we work here. But the structure here right now is 4 people, 2 people looking into the fund. So we have like a Latin American and a United States strategy here. But at the same time, we have like a specialist looking to open innovation initiatives and try to bring to add value to our portfolio startups, to the company to our portfolio startups.
Mm-hmm. And it's the team of 5 that's kind of overseeing that whole innovation function.
Yeah.
At the minute.
That I say that because I'm not a corporate venture capital for one company, but I'm the corporate venture capital of a whole ecosystem. Because we have here, we have like 13 companies that Gerdau has already even bought or started a company from the beginning. But they are really, actually, they are really doing well and they are big right now. For instance, we have a company called G2L, which is a shipper in a transportation company here in Brazil. And it happens to be the company. It's almost in the top 5 transportation company in Brazil. So it starts small inside Gerdau, but now it's really big. And that's one kind of company that we have here that we also behave as a corporate and venture capital for them.
Right, right. But that one was internally incubated, right? You didn't invest in it externally.
Exactly.
Right.
We have 6, as I said, we have 13 companies that we even made a joint venture. I can name some of them. Or we start from the beginning, or we started as a venture, but it became more important and we bought more than 20% of the company. So we behave like a really private equity kind of terms that we have here. And we're talking about the venture capital size. We have 10 investments. So it's an ecosystem of 25 or 23 companies that we have here. And adding to that, I also serve Gerdau as a corporate venture capital. So the whole company, the whole operation can bring value to us.
Right. And is the venture fund itself like a dedicated fund or is it on balance sheet?
Yeah, we have a structure, offshore structure that's beneath our operation in the United States because we also have operation there. Actually, Gerdau right now is kind of 50-50. The North American operation, the Latin operation has the same value for the shareholder. So we have this instrument there in the United States that helps us to invest all over Latin America and Brazil because it happens that the good companies here in Brazil also move to Delaware or move to Cayman or whatever, some kind of venture capital structure that they do. So it helps us to also invest on them.
So is that the corporate itself, Gerdau, that's kind of half in North America and its operations and half in Latin America?
Yeah, it has like a balance sheet effect for sure.
Right.
It's not like a, yeah.
It makes sense. So I suppose that kind of partially explains why when back in 2020, when they were looking for a, a kind of CVC as a service firm, they chose a North American, right?
Touchdown.
Makes sense.
Yeah, we can talk about it, but the strategy, right, at that time, we went to actually to understand more the American environment before we bring it to Brazil. And I think it was a right decision because it brought a lot of good governance for us here right now. So all the board and the CEO and the CFO, they really understand the value that the venture capital and the corporate venture capital structure can bring to them. So yeah, that's the first movement, but it was the right one.
Yeah. So let's talk about the process of bringing everything back in, I suppose, because now it's gone from managed by Touchdown to now managed entirely by Gerdau from beginning to end, right? So that's everything from sourcing, origination, execution, and portfolio management. I'm wondering, first of all, the rationale behind bringing it internally, because I presume, you know, Touchdown was doing a pretty good job of it, right? So then why the impulse to bring it back in?
Sure. That's the challenge that I faced last year. And I mean, like, Touchdown Ventures is a really senior and reasonable partner in terms when you're beginning and trying to understand the market and understand the way that we want to do this kind of initiative here inside the company. But and they did a fantastic job, you know, like we have a good portfolio. They're really senior. All the interaction that we have to with them were like a really good and well positioned. So we don't regret the partnership that we had, but it's more about the culture that the company has. And Gerdau has this its own culture. Gerdau wants to really bring the knowledge and the methodology inside the house in order for us to keep our knowledge and keep our track record and keep the information that we want to bring. So it's not about Touchdown per se, but it's more about our strategy and our view of the how Gerdau does businesses and all. And in this movement was like a really soft and really soft landing that we made. So we keep contact every 2 months and 3 months. We keep contact with them. And the challenge was like a more structuring the team, choosing the right people to be there to actually, because when you have a good partner doing a good job, the challenge here right now is more not to let the plates go fall down. You know, like you have to really keep the good governance. You have to keep the good deliverables that we have to bring to the committee and to the board. So it's more about our culture here than the third part partners that we have.
All right, and I presume now you have, as Gerdau, you have more kind of involvement and control over investment decisions, right? Which I presume was not the case when it was managed by Touchdown.
Sure, we do have a lot of influence. Every investment that we made was like a really decided for our board and internally. So Touchdown was served more like a deal flow, deal execution partner, and the decision was more like inside Gerdau.
Right, okay.
So it was working well, but it was more like a how the company wants to build the future of this area or this experience, you know? And we saw that internally we can do actually the same job with more understanding of our operation, with more understanding of our culture, with more understanding of our people and the people that we want to address and the problem that we want to address. It's more like to really bring the ownership in our hands, you know?
Mm-hmm. And talk me through the handover process. So what were some of like the first things? So in your first meeting, for example, with Touchdown, what were like the main priorities that you had to deal with in terms of taking that portfolio back under your control?
Awesome. So Touchdown was they were really open about this process. They're not actually not giving any information that we ask, but I was more focused on understand what they are delivering. So the aspect of the, you know, like the documents, all the information that they're gathering before sending the investment to our committee. So I have to keep this kind of level of information because even though I was working with other companies in their own structure before, because I was like a consultant for them, now at the time I needed to actually to translate it, like what Touchdown Venture was doing and translate to what our committee want to or improve it or you know, like, because it's normal for a consultant company or a third party company to put more information that normally a company wants. So I have to cut some things out and put and add other things because, you know, like it's just an adjustment. So actually we work like a 6 months as a Touchdown venture actually. So I did everything Touchdown was doing or trying to deliver whatever they are doing. But after that, I focus more on build our own way. So from now on, it's going to be our way. So how we think, what we have together, information and this kind of mentality knowledge. So that's now we, so if you take a picture right now, it's our way. It's like Gerdau's way of doing this kind of proposition.
And what does that difference look like? So what are the things that you can now do that you perhaps weren't able to do as much before?
I think that's not different. It's not a differentiation what I could have done or something like this. It's more the way we do, you know, like it's more the specific information that we want to bring or the specific specialist that we have to talk before any kind of investments or any kind of bridge that I have to build before any kind of investments. So nowadays, every investment that we want to bring to the table or to bring to the board, we want to first to actually make sure that it can add some value, it can add some synergy in our fund, in our company. So that's kind of some kind of change of mentality. I know like it's really hard for every third partner, and I was one of them before, to really understand the company or the company ways of doing business, you know. Because normally where you were actually serving one company and another company, or you're serving five companies at the same time, you're not such a profound or a deep way of doing business with them, you know, like just you're actually on an average of everyone and trying to serve them. But I mean, as I told you before, Touchdown Ventures is a really good partner. If you want to actually, if I would start again, if I would start a corporate venture capital, I would call them.
And I would imagine that part of the challenge for you was to make, I suppose, that transition as seamless as possible, right? As smooth as possible for the corporate parent. What kind of stuff did you have to consider to do that?
First of all, as I said, the documents. I focus on the governance of the documents. I mean, the documents, they should like have the same information or same kind of information, because I had my own way before doing my consulting process there. So I have actually to adapt this. So, okay, they focus more on this kind of analysis. They don't add this kind of analysis that I used to do. So I have to adjust. So the first time I was like this. The second time was more how they operate inside the board. You know, like the portfolio companies is we are actually trying to manage, because some opportunities they are talking more with Touchdown than us. So we have to really to bring to the table. Nowadays, you're going to talk with us. So I'm Arthur, I'm going to do this. So this kind of thing. So we have to establish this kind of governance. And the big hit came from our deal flow, because actually we were starting a team. We were starting a new process, and the Touchdown, the face of Gerdau was Touchdown before. So I have to start a deal flow process from the beginning, actually. And that's for us was the hardest part. Because we have to build our own network. We had to get some introduction, some cold calls, because I just have more influence in Brazil, not in the United States. And they are really strong in the United States. And part of our thesis is investments in the United States. So that's what the third challenge that I have here.
Hey, do you guys have any presence in the US? Maybe someone there to help with the origination?
Yeah. Nowadays we had before, but we are restructuring this year. We restructured the team. We have a team there. We have a director there. We have a manager there. They're not only focused on ventures. They do M&As. They do some kind of sustainability teams there and investment there. But they help us in our effort, in our venture effort.
And you mentioned also having to get to know the portfolio companies, which were obviously used to dealing with Touchdown before. Did you have to, I don't know, maybe like sell yourself to them saying, yeah, it's going to be fine. Don't worry. I'm Arthur.
Yeah. I mean, like the relationship was good, you know, like the time was good also, because 2022 venture capital was, everything was okay. So in the process was not that challenge, you know, like it was okay. Not hard to do.
Yeah. It got a little bit harder in the market, right? not too long after that.
Exactly. Now it's much harder than before. So, but it was okay. The process, the change was not. It's okay. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. And did they have any kind of concerns about the switch?
Not at all. I mean, any company with the change, every change that we made was okay and all.
Okay. And has your thesis kind of stayed roughly the same as it was before, or now that maybe you're able to I don't know, maybe connect them better with the internal functions of Gerdau, has that kind of changed a bit?
Yeah, the thesis was the same. Actually, we add one more theme to invest, which is artificial intelligence and machine learning. So our look there is more about how can we bring or add efficiency to our ecosystem than for industrial or robotics kind of, you know, like it's more about new business or new money than efficient and industrial, because Gerdau has a huge operation looking to industry 4.0 and looking into this kind of themes, robotics and artificial intelligence for industrial. So we just add this kind of theme right now.
And the other, if I'm not mistaken, I think your other themes include construction, sustainability and logistics, right? And you've added the kind of AI angle to it.
Exactly. So we just added one more. And when I say sustainability, I'm talking about wind and solar, carbon, green hydrogen.
Okay, so waste. Even energy generation.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Last year, we made a joint venture with XP. I don't know if you know XP here in Brazil. It's So we made this kind of new venture together, or joint venture together. And it's focused on building and buying solar and wind farms or parks or plants.
Interesting. And is that you did say it was a joint venture, right? Not a venture play, because it sounds
like... Yeah, it's a joint venture.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. Because I was going to say it sounds a bit more like an infrastructure play than a venture one. Unless there's like obviously new technology involved and stuff like that. You've made, I think, since the handover happened, you've made two investments to date, right? Tell me a bit about those.
Yeah, we made two investments in logistics. One of them was a Colombian startup focused on fulfillment. That's a theme that we see a lot of opportunity here in LATAM. And it's a Colombian startup that focus on also, they started the company looking to the Mexican market and Brazilian market also. So it's a Colombian startup, but they have like this real Latin mentality. And for us, was really impressive what they are doing and what they are delivering. And since our investment, they doubled the size of the company. They're doubling their revenue. So yeah, the company was really good. And as I said before, this first investment was a starting point as for us to do our way, you know, like to do our kind of methodology, to imply our evaluation process, our, you know, teams and product and market diligence that we're doing. So that was our first experience doing that. And that's a theme that we like a lot in logistics. And we see a huge opportunity because that's a service that really underserved in LATAM. So that's the way we think. After that, the market came down. I'm talking about like the second half of 2022. At the time, it was really, how can I say it? It's not frustrating, but the market was going down. We were more diligent in our process. We are bringing a lot of actually understand better the businesses, the good projects. Some of them, they just hold themselves and, you know, like trying to break even and not to fundraise anymore. So we were facing more kind of, mainly in LATAM, when you're talking about Series B and Series C, almost we don't have almost any deal in the time. And that's where we were more trying to do businesses. So most of the startups, they are trying to break even and not go into the market. So the second half of 2022 was actually bad in terms of the market, but for us it was fine because actually we just focus more on our portfolio. We focus more on achieving a really good excellence in our methodology and in our governance, and that was really good. We tried to invest in 2 startups at the time, but was not approved of our board, so that was fine. And we handled it really well. At the beginning of 2023, the market was still the same, but at the second quarter, we saw more kind of opportunities in the United States. So we focused a little bit more there, and we made an investment in the United States and also in a logistic company. Now, more focused on artificial intelligence and AIs. They do a really good job in trying to actually use AI in logistics and not just like this kind of hype thing that in the market. So we try to understand better, is it a really good solution or just a hype? But I mean, they were using machine learning processes even before the hype. So we are really pretty confident that they're going to do a really good job. So we made an investment there. So that's the way we think, you know, like if the market in Latin is not doing so well, we can focus more in the United States. If United States is not presenting a good opportunity for us, we can focus more in Latin. So that's more or less how we think here.
And are all your verticals, are you looking at all of them equally in both markets, or are some kind of more viable in the US, for example, as opposed to Latin?
Actually, we try to look at the same way all over the regions that we normally invest. But we know, like for instance, if you want to do a really cutting edge technology, it's not the game that we do in Latin. If I want to really invest in a deep tech, normally I'm going to look to United States, or if I want to invest maybe in some kind of sustainability technology, I also open it to Europe, because there we can find a better or more advanced market for some kind of technology in carbon capture or carbon offsetting. That's not a thing that we really want to do, invest in Europe. We don't have any investment there, but that's some kind of benchmarking, or to understand the thesis or understand the new frontier, we have to look there also. So, but when you look, we are talking about Latin. We see Latin not as like a cutting edge technology, as I said before, is more about the inclusive technology, you know, because in Latin, when we see like it's as a really whole region, if we compare it to a country, like if it was a country, one country, it's going to be like the third biggest economy in the world, you know, like only behind China and US. So when you look at this region, we have like when you compare to some other emerging markets, you're going to see such as India, we're going to have like one-fourth of their population, one-third of their population, but at the same time, we have the double of their GDP. So Latin is a really good opportunity, but it's a really good opportunity for inclusive technology, to bring technology to the people, because in every aspect of Latin, we are underserved here. If you're talking about banking, if you're talking about construction, if you talk about health, talk about anything, there are opportunities here to invest. So that's how we're looking to Latin. So our investment here in Latin, they, for instance, I have a company in our portfolio that really beats or really focus on bring the bureaucracy and or red tape in Brazil to more manageable level, you know, like, because you know, Latin is a really tough place to invest, you know, a really tough geopolitical environment. And we have to understand it, because we also are Latin. Me and myself, I'm Brazilian, so I totally understand the struggle that some entrepreneurs they are facing. And sometimes they are not came from Harvard, they're not came from MIT. That's normally seen in the United States or some kind of American entrepreneurs. In Brazil, in Latin, they're more like a real economy, or for sure they're smart. For sure they have a good college background sometimes. But I think like they're going to face more tough times. Because when you look at Latin's macro or geopolitical or currency or, you know, politics, economics, and this kind of thing, it's a really hard place to understand and trying to invest. But when you look at the micro and the entrepreneur there, they're facing a lot of challenges and they're thriving, they're keep growing. It's really amazing to see, you know.
Mm-hmm. Definitely for you know, for consumer technology, LATAM is a region that has very kind of quick uptake of stuff, right? So if you look at, you know, Uber or stuff, you know, Brazil was one of the, you know, one of the fastest countries to kind of adopt it. Chile is also very quick on the uptake in terms of their consumer market. But you guys invest a lot in kind of B2B technologies, right? Is it kind of the same there?
Exactly. We invest more in B2B because we have this B2B mentality. We have this B2B gene here in Gerdau because we are an industry. We are a steel manufacturer. We are the real economy in LATAM. And we have a presence in Argentina, Peru, Colombia, Brazil, Mexico, some countries in Central America and also. So we really understand that the B2B, business-to-business model, they can really thrive in LATAM. So, and we think also that the B2C is more expensive for a kind of corporate venture capital investments, and they are more capital intensive also in terms of growth. And in a B2B model, we as a company, we as a corporate venture capital can help more the entrepreneur, for instance, to come to Brazil, to have a network here, to help them to really grow here in this kind of environment. And also we can help a Brazilian entrepreneur to go to Mexico, to go to Colombia, to go to Peru, whatever they want to go. Because we have this kind of gene, we have this kind of mentality here. So it's easier for us.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that the corporate kind of uptake of technology is roughly on par with that of consumers in the region?
Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, it's more about the preference, but I think that the region is also underserved in terms of B2C also. So we can help, we can add more value, we can unlock more value to do our startups in B2B than in B2C. That's our main proposition here. But at the same time, we have some companies here in our portfolio that address B2C. And at the same time, we have a company inside Gerdau that also attends to B2C. So we're trying to balance this kind of thing.
And speaking of balance, actually, how do you kind of, what does the interaction look like between the venture investment side of Gerdau Next and then the other kind of innovation instruments, the venture building, the joint ventures and stuff like that? Is there kind of synergies between them?
Sure. That's a thing that we have a mandate for, is to really bring value to the companies. And when we do invest, we see like it's not mandatory for us to in the D0 or the D1, this kind of synergy, they have to happen. But in our investment process, we see that, okay, it's not going to be right now, but in the future, in the near future, it's going to happen. This company is going to join with this one and it's going to add value to that one. So we have to check this, and every investment that we make, it's not mandatory to have in the present moment, but we have to build this bridge, you know? So as I said before, I'm also the corporate venture capital for these other companies, you know? We behave like a one ecosystem.
Right, right. And zooming out to the kind of wider, regional ecosystem, Brazil itself, I mean, it's a monster in the region, right? Certainly compared to the other countries, which are also, you know, growing very quickly, you know, Chile in particular, Argentina, of course, Colombia as well. If you look at the kind of growth over the last couple of years and in the Brazilian market, so for example, when you were with Ace, what are the kind of main changes that you've seen happening?
When I talk Brazil, and when I talk about Brazil with some Latin entrepreneurs, they see Brazil like this really monster market, really hard to enter, really hard to understand. And I totally understand, because even though some kind of investors, mainly the investor that normally overlook Latin, like that's the same region, or they don't understand the region really well, even though we're called Latin, we have a really different cultures. We are like this really Portuguese place, or this Portuguese island that we are the only ones that talk Portuguese, you know, like inside Latin, and we have our own culture. So Brazil just is this kind of monsters. We have like our red tape, our bureaucracy here in Brazil is really, even though harder than some kind of countries in Latin, But at the same time, this is the really good opportunity. And the ecosystem here, when we compare to other countries, such as our neighborhoods, like Colombia or Peru or Chile, it's going to be more vivid. We have more capital here in Brazil in terms of venture capital. The biggest Latin funds, they are here in Brazil. But it doesn't mean that, for instance, the Colombian market or the Colombian entrepreneur environment is really good. I really like the Colombian because I'm not sure if the happy mafia that happened there that brought a lot of good entrepreneurs to the market. But when you compare to the Colombian neighbors, Colombia is really good. For instance, we have David Vélez that were Colombian came to Brazil. We have some kind of good, really good investors such as Marcelo from SoftBank that came from Colombia. We, as ourselves, we invest in true Colombians in startups, and they are really amazing entrepreneurs. So there are some differences, but at the same time, we can understand each other. We can understand that, okay, we have a political turmoil in Peru. We also have a political turmoil in Ecuador and Brazil also. So we kind of understand each other, you know. When you talk about inflation, we know inflation really well. So yeah. We look to our hermanos in Argentina and say, come on, man. We understand each other, you know.
Yeah, definitely some macro shocks in Argentina for quite a few years now.
Yeah. But I mean, Brazil also faced it, you know. Mm-hmm. The old schools investors, they know it really well, you know. Like they know how to operate in kind of inflationary environment, you know, such as today.
They've been through a few cycles themselves, right?
Yeah.
And speaking of geopolitics, actually, you know, around this time last year in Brazil, there was a government change. Has that kind of effect been felt at all on the ground?
Yeah, that's one thing that we normally talk with some entrepreneurs, because we have like this election period. It's kind of funny, you know. For example, last year we had like our election in Brazil, and now we also have the World Cup of soccer.
Right. Yeah.
So that's we kind of like a call like a trash year. It's not nothing's gonna happen this year because it's our culture, you know. Like we stop 1 month just see the World Cup. We're not working. We have an early leave in our work environment. So. Just to see them.
That's right. You get like days off, right?
Yeah, days off.
Oh man, that's amazing.
Just in order for us to watch a match, you know. So we have to know this one. But as I said before, Latin is not about the macro. It's not the macro environment. It's the micro that it's important. When you see like every segment of our lives here is really underserved. So the entrepreneur, such as when you look like a Nubank, for instance, they don't have like this really kind of disruptive technology that bring in really, you know, like and if nobody saw that before. No, they're doing actually kind of the same technology, but well served and serving the customer. They're understanding better the problem. So that's the game in Latin, you know. You have to look to the micro. And understand your customer, because the macro is going to change for sure. The macro, you have like a left-wing government, and then after that, going to be a more right government. They're going to be corrupt for some kind of, you know, like in Latin, we have to face it, and we are really, how can I say it? We really, it's a really important thing for us that the entrepreneur understand that the macro is hard, but not be like a operate with them. We don't, for instance, we don't invest in any company that have any relationship with the government. You know, we don't invest in them because we think that we have a lot of risk to mitigate. If you want to add a political or government risk to the table, it's not going to be a good thing for us. So yeah, that's my thing here. For sure it's going to change. We were actually looking into Peruvian market just before the political right now turmoil. There was a startup there that was really good for us. We really liked the entrepreneur. They were doing really well. But in January, it starts almost a civil war there. I don't know what they're calling there. So yeah, that's going to change. It's going to be one more variable to our equation. But we really like to see an entrepreneur focus on the micro, focus on the pain points or focus on the strategy.
So apart from the kind of geopolitical uncertainty that we tend to see in Latin American markets, what other kind of bottlenecks remain, both in the wider region and in Brazil, that kind of are slowing down the pace of growth?
I can say more about the macro economy, or the macro can also affect for sure. But as the macro affects also the money in the region, you know, when a big investor wants to look to Latin America, or they want to invest in any other emerging markets, we are competing with Africa, we are competing with China, we are competing, I don't know, to India for this kind of money, you know. And the macro really affects the money availability for some kinds of Series B and Series C investments here in Latin. I think it's a really bad thing about the region, because it's scarce in terms of Series B and Series C money. Because the early stage funds, they are really good in Brazil, in Latin. They know really well. We have it's a really kind of good foundation for the venture capital market or the corporate venture market in Latin. We have funds doing this kind of business here for 10, 15 years, and they build a really good reputation, really good companies came from them. So I think, in the early stage, we are really well served, or better than other regions. But if we, as a corporate venture, we want to invest in Series E, Series B, and Series C, in Latin, it's really hard to really access to the money. Normally, an entrepreneur has to go to US and ask for money.
Is that mostly a product of domestic or local investors kind of not having the risk appetite to go in that late?
Yeah, I mean, like, when you are talking like the real growth money, they are more focused on IPOs, and they have this kind of calculation about their exit. You know, like, they are more focused on about like a 3x or 10x their investments. I mean, like, it's my opinion. It's the way I see this. Latin is harder for an liquidation event. You know, like, true. Our stock exchanges here, they're not so liquid as in the United States. It's never going to be like this. So it's normal. It's really usual to see like a Latin company open capital in the United States. We don't have this kind of entropy here. The money is not flowing like to the top of their investment. So that's why I think, you know, like, when an investor is looking to Latin, okay, I can do 10x to these investments. I can do 6x in these funds. Maybe it's not the case, you know. Like, you're gonna move to a more private equity or some kind of this another type of money.
If you go back 5 years, for example, there's not really there are very few CVCs, right? And now there are loads and growing more. Every day, presumably, I suppose part of why might be a shift in the kind of mentality of corporates, right? Away, well, not totally away, but shifting more towards kind of minority investments and away from just an M&A kind of mentality. Do you see that accelerate? Well, first of all, is that something you see, and do you see it accelerating?
Sure, we see it. And I was part of the system, and when it starts to really grow really fast. So Gerdau is one of the oldest funds, and we are talking, we have like a 3 years old. We are 3 years old. So it's kind of funny to know that we were one of the biggest one. We are the top two or the top one in 2020, but now we are the top five, because some companies, they open up bigger funds and a bigger strategy than us at that time. So in 2020, actually 2019 or 2020 or 2018, we saw CVCs operating as like a M&A strategy or M&A branch of the company strategy. And it brought a lot of, how can I say, a bad deals and a bad reputation for the market. So it's normal to talk with some kind of investors or venture capital investor here, mainly in Latin and mainly in Brazil. They don't like corporate ventures. Normally, they say like, oh, there's two or three maybe that we invest, but none of them we want to do business anymore, because we had like a bad experience before. And that's true, you know? That's true. And that bring us to the corporate venture capital strategy some kind of bad reputation or bad selection, you know, because, and for sometimes some entrepreneurs, they see like, if I cannot raise money with venture capital, I'm going to a corporate venture capital. It's going to be like a second term or a second hand kind of mentality to corporate venture capital. And actually, we deserve it, you know. Some venture capital, corporate venture capital funds, they did deserve this kind of reputation. So the really important thing for us, and really important thing, as we told before, we worked with some kind of good partner doing a really good job. It brought us like a really good reputation. So Gerdau has now we work with it, a good reputation in terms of corporate venture capital. We respect the founder. We respect the terms. We respect the timing. You know, it's not timing to talk about any kind of M&As, any kind of anything, or any kind of first refusal or first offer. It's not that time to talk about it. It's more time to talk about how can we bring value, or how can we can help this entrepreneur grow, or how can we help them to come to Brazil or go to United States, whatever. That's how we think. So we think now that the market's more mature. When I talk with some other corporate venture capitals, they are, oh no, we know better. We now working with some better terms. We understand more this kind of investments. So we cannot compare the corporate venture capital in 2019 to the corporate venture capital today. I think it's much more diverse, much more, they understand better the entrepreneur, they understand better the terms and anything, you know.
It's more professionalized.
Yeah, much more professional. So, but what I'm seeing right now, what I saw actually in 2022, in 2021, it's just about the hype. Oh, we have to bring to do this corporate venture capital because everybody's doing. And I have to go to the news and say the company X is starting $100 million fund and it's really awesome. And when I was working in a consulting firm, I saw it a lot, you know. Okay, let's build this corporate venture. Let's go to the news and just wait for the startups to come in and ask for money. And that's a terrible strategy, you know, like it never has worked. And I make a joke with our colleagues here and I say, you're seeing this this kind of buzz that they're trying to do. Let's talk with them 2 years from now. It's not gonna be the same, you know.
It's not gonna turn out.
Yeah. Normally they start with a lot of energy, a lot of money, marketing, etc. But I mean, our view about innovation is on the day by day basis, you know, like you have to deliver. You have to add value. In fact, not only go to the news and say, oh, I have this corporate adventure. I'm so cool. I'm so innovative. I'm now really a good company. No, it's not like this. This game, this venture capital and the corporate venture capital is about reputation. And reputation, you build like a day in a day by day basis. You do it by doing the right and the right time, respecting the founder, helping the founder. That's our philosophy here, you know.
Reputation, I suppose, comes as a result of you know, experience and I suppose execution. And do you think that and learning more, right? And do you think that as the market moves more in that direction, and more corporates are looking to expand their innovation functions, but aren't really ready for a CVC yet? Do you think that more of them are going to do kind of like what Gerdau did, which is start a CVC unit with a partner and then kind of bring it into their own corporate fold?
If you're not really, how can I say it? If the executive or the team are not really well structured or have some doubts or doesn't know how to really work with startups, it's good for you to hire a venture partner. Maybe for 3 years or 5 years, whatever, you feel comfortable to make this movement. But when I'm talking about Gerdau, it's really hard to actually truly explain, because Gerdau already has like a really business and innovative culture. I'm not saying because I want to a raise or...
Sure.
I'm not saying that because of any kind of a black agenda, a hidden agenda that I should have. I'm saying that we are well known for it, you know. We have this kind of really well-structured initiative called Gerdau Next. We embrace a lot of opportunities. We've embraced these 13 companies right now, but we have like any more companies in our oven to go to the market. So we are looking to do businesses, to diversify the revenue. It's a really well-structured strategy. So when you have a venture capital branch in this kind of bigger strategy and this bigger culture, it's much more easier, you know. It's easier than have to start a really tough company or real economy company. So that's my view on this. So I kind of feel really blessed to be a manager in this fund, because when I talk with a new kind of technology to our committee, to our vice president or whatever we want to talk, everybody is kind of receptive. They want to see, they want to check what's our view there, what opportunity can we add to them, how can we bring to our ecosystem. And it's really good to know, you know, like it's really, really easier to do business here than other companies.
And what advice would you give other companies that are looking to do that, especially if they don't have the kind of supporting structure that Gerdau already had?
Yeah, but I mean, like what I'm talking here about Gerdau is Gerdau today, but I'm pretty sure that Gerdau didn't start like this.
Right, right. Okay.
So it's a process as far as I can tell, is came from 2012, 2011, where Gerdau is trying to do a lot of things, but Gerdau as a company already had this kind of entrepreneurial ownership mindset, ownership culture all over the company. So it was not like this way. But the advice that I normally give is, first, the result comes first, then the governance. You have to actually to have early wins, quick wins, in order for you to justify, or in order for you to have a flagship or a winner project, in order for you to actually to buy some time, to buy some visibility for the innovation or innovative department. So what normally companies do is let's start with the methodology. Let's start with the governance. It's important. The governance is totally important. It's totally important for the longevity of the initiative. But you have to have a quick win. You have to have a value on the day zero or in a really short term. You know, I started this pilot. I started this kind of proof of concept and really brought a really cost reduction or a really, you know, a big opportunity for the company. And after that, you can bring some kind of onion or some kind of structure over this kind of situation. And in my experience, what I saw, the company was more focused on, let's start a governance. And a lot of PPTs, a lot of talking, a lot of, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do an acceleration batch. I'm going to do a challenge program, anything like that. But it doesn't bring any value if you don't have a really understand of the opportunity or really understand of the challenge that we want to bring to the table, you know? I always saying that you have to move the needle here. You have to move any kind of needle, actually, at the first when you're trying to start it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. And what about advice that you could give to startups that want to pitch you? What do you want to hear from them?
Sure. That's a joke that I have here. And I saw it from Mark Anderson. And Mark is a really awesome guy. And he said, if an entrepreneur needs an advice, you are in the wrong place.
Right.
Actually, the entrepreneur, they have to follow their gut, you know. Even the startups that we are on the board, and we have some board seats or observer seats, it's more like we are investors. For sure, we know a lot of startups. We talk with a lot of entrepreneurs. We are seeing more in the big picture. And we can help you maybe you can do this or see this opportunity there. But the entrepreneur, they have to follow their gut, you know, because we are investing on them. We are investing on their team. We are investing on their idea and how they do businesses. And And for me, it's hard to see sometimes because we are on some boards and we see some investor just throwing some rules. You have to do that, you have to do that. And the founder are following. Sometimes it's not good. In the end of the day, we have to truly believe the entrepreneur. We have to really understand that they are really trying to build a good company, address a good market, and resolve a good problem, a great problem. So
yeah,
I follow Mark. So
there you go. And finally, you know, you started with the Gerdau last year. Where do you hope to see it in another 2 years?
Yeah, I'm just beginning my position as a manager here. I'm really blessed because I have a, again, I'm not trying to get any raise here, but I have a really, how can I say, not boss, but leaders that truly believe in me and truly believe in what we are doing, and they understand what we are doing. So I know that's hard to have in other companies. So I truly believe in my career here in Gerdau because this environment is really open for this, for our strategy and our way of doing business. So I see myself here in Gerdau, and my challenge here is actually to deploy the money really well and focus on really putting value to the table and giving this back to our stakeholder, our shareholder. That's more, how can I say, corporate way of saying things. But I truly believe that our leadership, they're focused and they understand and they want to do that. It's not about the marketing. When you see what Gerdau has, this ecosystem that we are building, I cannot see any benchmark in Brazil. I cannot see anyone doing the same way or just doing the same speed that we are doing. So it makes me really comfortable to be in a place, really proud to be in the place that foments this kind of mentality, this kind of agility. And for me, it's really amazing to be here.
Very well. Well, that is a great note to end things on there, Arthur. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Fernando.
That's it from us this week, folks. You can find CVC Unplugged on Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your audio entertainment. I have been Fernando Moncada, and our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from InEar Production. Go take a look at his work at InEarProduction.com today. We'll be back again next week, as ever. Until then, have a good one.